Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Digging in the Dirt podcast. My name is Jonathan Trotter, and it is such a privilege to spend some time with you. I apologize. It's been a little bit since episodes one and two. Had a little bit of the flu and a lot of grad school, and I'm just getting back to it. So I had a cough for a few weeks, and I thought I would not bless you with that sound. And I wanted to make sure that this episode sounded right, because this episode's about sex. And I'm kind of nervous, kind of excited to share episode three with you, Sex and the Married Missionary. Now, of course, if you're not overseas and have not worked as a cross-cultural worker, as a missionary, this episode will still probably apply to you, whether you're single or married. There's just a lot there. So I'm excited to begin here in just a little bit. Also wanted to remind you, one of my goals in these episodes is to have a part of it that is reading from the book, Digging in the Dirt, Musings on Missions, Emotions, and Life in the Mud. But then I hope to also have a part of each podcast that is dedicated to answering questions that folks might have. That might be a little question, that might be a big question. Check out the episode link, and there will be a link in there that goes to a Google form where you could submit a question if you would like to. And that can be submitted anonymously. I can read your name online if you would like. There's a place where you can put that in. It can also be anonymous, so don't let that worry you. I think that is all of the intro stuff. I hope you all are doing well, and I'm excited to get back into episode three here. Let me take a sip of tea. And we'll begin with Sex and the Married Missionary. All right, here we go. This is page 19, by the way, of Digging in the Dirt. We don't talk about sex very much. Sure, we might joke about it. The first working title for this chapter was The Missionary Position, but we don't actually talk about it very much. Most folks are scared to death to have an honest, non-joking, realistic talk about sex. Maybe they could talk about it with a good friend, but with their spouse? Gasp. The truth is, sex matters. It's not the biggest deal, but it's a real deal, and it comes up all the time in my conversations with missionaries. A healthy, mutually enjoyable sex life is a good thing and is worth pursuing. It won't make everything rainbows and butterflies, but it is a great mediator for the hard times, making things a little less awful. That being said, sex is even more important to talk about in the context of non-satisfying love lives. As it turns out, the power of a non-functioning sex life to taint everything is stronger than the power of a healthy sex life to improve everything. Dr. Barry McCarthy, researcher and writer, says, quote, "A core concept is the paradoxical role of sexuality in the lives of individuals and couples. Healthy sexuality has a 15 to 20% positive integral role. Dysfunctional, conflictual, or avoidant sexuality has an inordinately powerful negative role. Clinicians underestimate the impact of sexual dysfunction and conflict. Sex needs to be dealt with directly. Sexuality is more than a symptom," unquote. Or end quote, I should say. Sorry, okay, back to the book. In other words, this isn't a quote, by the way, this is me. All right, back to the book, sorry. In other words, a healthy, satisfying sex life contributes at its maximum to about 20% of a person's happiness and well-being. But when things aren't so great, when a couple is demoralized and alienated, McCarthy says that sexuality has a 50 to 75% role of subverting intimacy and threatening marital stability. He further clarifies that he's not talking about a problem that is acute or new, but a problem that's been festering and has become chronic and severe. It would be great if cross-cultural couples didn't wait until their sexual issues were chronic and severe. Things don't have to be so difficult so often and for so long, but we must be willing to talk about them. Discussing sex openly and honestly is crucial to having sex openly and honestly. Writing for the Gottman Institute, Kyle Benson writes, quote, Let's talk about sex, because it turns out the most important part of cultivating a healthy sex life is talking about a healthy sex life. Only 9% of couples who can't comfortably talk about sex with one another say that they're satisfied sexually. End quote. My wife Elizabeth referenced this statistic in one of her articles explaining, quote, "If you can't talk about sex with each other, the likelihood that you're having mutually satisfying sex is pretty low. But talking about sex can be risky. You might find out something about yourself that you don't want to know. You might feel rejected." End quote. So let's talk about married sexuality on the field. Let's figure out how to have healthier conversations about sex with our partners, conversations that are filled with safety, mutual trust, and deep attunement. Men, consider starting with my article on the life overseas entitled Three Ways to Care for the Heart of Your Wife. But before we go any further, a word to our friends who are single. Of course, single people are sexual beings too. We need to talk about sex and the single missionary, and not just in a negative, don't do this and definitely don't do that manner. I hope somebody writes that article, but for now, it's beyond the scope of this chapter. Complicating factors. Sex is really complex, and the opportunities for it to go sideways are many. Sex in marriage is often a place of deep insecurities, unmet needs, fear, shame, anger, and even grief. And that's in your passport country. For the cross-cultural couple, challenges start before you even arrive. Pre-field training and fundraising might have you traipsing all over, living in spare rooms, sharing space with kids, or camping out in hotels. These things do not necessarily lead to a vibrant and exciting sex life. They don't have to kill it, of course, but they don't necessarily help. Then, once you arrive on the field, you may discover local taboos that impact your marriage. No touching in public, for example. Or a climate that's way too hot for warm bodies. Sweaty bodies under a mosquito net may look romantic in the movies, but that's because in the movies, you can't hear the neighbor's chickens. There aren't giant lizards or rats squirming around the ceiling. Your kids didn't just throw up. You're not in language school, and you don't smell like that. You might lack access to regular showers or water in general, and privacy might be harder to come by. Even if no one can see you making love, you might live in a place where people can hear everything. If that's different than where you came from, chances are it is not an aphrodisiac. Conjugating verbs all day might not leave you with enough energy to conjugate anything else. All right, sidetrack for a second. I love that line. I'm going to read it again. I remember writing it in a coffee shop in Cambodia and laughing out loud. Here's the line again, back to the book. Conjugating verbs all day might not leave you with enough energy to conjugate anything else. People often begin their cross-cultural service with a young family, or they start having kids while they're on the field. Across the board, this is a challenging time for couples, with sexuality necessarily changing. This season always requires a couple's sexuality to pivot. That doesn't mean it has to be worse, but it will change. If that change is happening at the same time as all sorts of other stressors, you may not have enough bandwidth to address or deal with things. I was discussing a draft of this chapter with my wife, and she so eloquently put it like this. Basically, everything in the world is conspiring against your sex life. But again, there is hope. Lots of folks have written about sex, and much of it is very helpful and well-researched. If this is an area of your life that is not going well, check out some of the ideas, get a book or two, and begin talking about it. If this is an area of your life that is going well, check out some of these ideas, get a book or two, and keep talking about it. Ideas. Number one, talk about it, but not right after it. Analyzing a sexual experience right after you've had it risks all sorts of negative things, so do not do it. Set aside a time that feels private and safe and talk about it. If you feel like you can't talk about sex with your spouse, find a trusted and confidential person and begin to explore why talking about it is so hard. This does not mean you shouldn't talk about sex during sex. In fact, learning how to state your needs and desires clearly and kindly during sex is one of the skills many of the books listed below deal with. Idea number two, prioritize it. Do you need to schedule it? People think that scheduling sex is not romantic, but we schedule other things that we enjoy or that we think are healthy for us, so why not this? Also, I find this reasoning from Linda Weiner and Constance Avery Clark compelling. Quote, "It could be argued that the importance of spontaneous touching is one of the most overrated aspects of intimate connections, particularly in the context of a long-term relationship. As we have suggested, to have a successful party, one must plan ahead. That doesn't mean anything about the spontaneity that may happen once the party is underway." End quote. Plus, if you have kids and you live abroad, not scheduling it is nearly the same thing as planning to never do it. Are hotels cheaper where you live? Get a room. Even if you only use it for an afternoon, it's probably cheaper than dinner and a movie where you come from. Side note, our children, years after the fact, realized that those long dates that we took where we would, well, they didn't know we would get a hotel and go to lunch and dinner until they read this chapter, and then they put it all together. But they're older now, so that was okay. Oh, man, this is fun. Okay, idea number three, back to the book. Recognize that women have desire too. If you're a woman who has a sex drive or whose desires seem stronger and more frequent than your husband's, you are not a weirdo or a freak. You're actually pretty normal. It's time to put this damaging myth to rest. Elizabeth wrote about this, quote, "The fact that sexlessness was primarily dependent on the man was news to me, as women often get slandered in culture for being frigid. This mischaracterization seems key to common Christian teachings that women want affection and connection while men want sex. Research shows that this traditional approach is unhelpful in the sexual arena. Women want good sex too." End quote. Idea number four, get a do not disturb sign or a pink thing. Many of us live in places without central air conditioning, meaning the door is closed when the air is on, whether or not we need privacy. Years ago, we decided to tell our kids that they can knock on our door unless we have the pink thing on the door. For us, the pink thing is just an old pink hairband. It's also a fantastic sex aid. We have four kids, and we want them to know they can knock on the door without making us mad or irritated, unless the pink thing is on the door. When the pink thing's present, they can only knock if someone's bleeding or if the house is on fire. It might not seem like a big deal, but having a lock on the door and the pink thing provides a zone of safety that is very helpful. And if my kids ever read this chapter, hi. We also use the pink thing when we just want some privacy to talk or read the news or browse Facebook. It's not always sexy time, so don't freak out thinking, whoa, that thing was always on their door. I mean, sometimes. All right, side note for a second. After Digging in the Dirt came out, my teenage sons read it, and of course they flipped to this chapter and started reading this chapter, and I was watching them read this chapter, and when they got to this paragraph, oh, it was so much fun, because I wrote this years and years ago, and they had never read it, and the idea that I was speaking to them threw them for a loop, and we had good laughs all around. All right, idea number five, back to the book. Recognize the impact of sexual assault or abuse. If abuse or assault is a part of either spouse's history, and if you feel like there's any chance that it's having a negative impact on your sex life, I highly encourage you to figure out a way to talk with a trained therapist who can walk with you through whatever needs to be walked through. I also realize that ongoing sexual harassment is common in some contexts. If that's the case, again, make sure you are regularly processing with someone who can help bear those stories. You don't have to hold those experiences alone, and you are not weak or faithless if they leave a mark. Number 6, deal with porn. Porn use by either spouse will harm the sexual relationship, so it must be dealt with seriously. Andy Bruner wrote this on A Life Overseas, quote, "Recovery is possible. It's a ton of work, for sure, but it does happen. Kay said for years that when she wrote her memoir, it would be called Pornography Saved My Marriage, because that was our experience. After going through the pain together, after healing together, our marriage was stronger than it had ever been before." End quote. Resources to continue the conversation. Check out the article on making love at trottersforone.com. It is a list of sex books I recommend all the time. Now, side note, that may sound weird, but I have loved reading sex books for years and years. I particularly enjoy the ones that are evidence-based and written by scientists and researchers and sometimes theologians. Check out that article. Back to the book. And here are 3 fantastic articles from Elizabeth. What I Want to Teach My Daughters About Married Sex on velvetashes.com. What Christians Can Learn from a New York Times article about sleeping with married men on trottersforone.com. And Women Have Desire Too, The Thing We Overlook When We Talk About the Billy Graham Rule on trottersforone.com. Side note, many of those are also in our book, Serving Well. All right, back to the book. I know that one article can't fix anything, but maybe many can. So check these out, read some books, and start talking. As one woman with decades of experience in living abroad and serving cross-cultural workers recently said, here's to sexually satisfied and great missionary marriages around the globe. Amen and amen. All right. Hey, thanks for joining me for episode 3. And I will just say I have sat with a lot of couples. Sometimes the things that we've talked about regards sex or sexual challenges. And like the first parts of that chapter say, like, it has a lot of potential to really harm your marriage and to really hurt you. And so it's worth figuring out. And there are so many resources out there that you can access to help you. Start with the books, start with those articles, but don't be afraid. If you need to talk with somebody, with a therapist or a trained person, even just to sort of unload your own story, do it, because that's going to pay off a lot. I can't predict that it will pay off in your sex life, but having a safe place to talk about these types of things is going to be good no matter what. So thanks for hanging out with me. And I'll see you later for episode 4. And as always, go with God.